Chooses to be silenced. So tonight, let's lift our voices together in a little bit of activism. When I say something you like, you say, stand up, fight back. When CARE and Muslims are under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back. When Palestine is under attack, what do? Stand up, fight back. When free speech is under attack, what do? Free Palestine, thank you so much. I love you all.
That was Medea Benjamin, peace activist, author, and co-founder of Code Pink, speaking at the Council on American-Islamic Relations annual banquet. You've been listening to Arab Voices, a syndicated radio talk show on dozens of radio stations in the U.S. and Europe since 2002. Our shows are archived online, and you can listen to them by visiting arabvoices.net. And that does it for the show today. Thanks for listening. This is Saeed, executive producer and host of Arab Voices. Until we meet next week, peace on earth.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to Policy for the People, a show that explores the public policies that can lift up all Oregonians. This show is a collaboration between KMUZ Radio and the Oregon Center for Public Policy. I am your host, Juan Carlos Ordóñez.
Starbucks does a good deal of business in Oregon, probably more business in Oregon than in just about any corner of the world. For one, the U.S. is the largest market for the world's largest coffee company. And in the U.S., there are more Starbucks stores per capita, per person, in Oregon than in any other state, more than in Washington State, where the company got started. With all those lattes and espressos being sold in Oregon, you would imagine that Starbucks reaps a good amount of profits here in our state. So how much in profits does Starbucks make in Oregon? And how much in taxes does the company pay to the state? We actually don't know. That information is secret. But one thing we do know is that Starbucks uses accounting tricks to keep its profits from being taxed where they were made. According to a report that came out earlier this year, Starbucks has dodged taxes on about $1.3 billion in profits over the past decade. That's a lot of taxes that Starbucks is not paying in the places where it made its profits, places like Oregon. In this episode of Policy for the People, we're looking into how big corporations like Starbucks hide their profits to avoid taxes, how this hurts us all, and how requiring big corporations to make more information public would help ensure that they pay their fair share. Wherever Starbucks does business, it benefits immensely from the public sector, from having a healthy and educated workforce, to a court system and a system of public safety that the company can count on, to the streets and other public infrastructure that allows its customers to get to its stores and to buy all those cups of coffee. Massive corporations benefit more than anyone from the public sector, from the infrastructure and services that are paid for through the tax system. And yet, it's well known that the biggest corporations, the multinational corporations like Starbucks, routinely play games with the tax system. The exact ways they do it is usually hidden from view. They do their tax tricks under the cover of darkness. But in the case of Starbucks, the public caught a lucky break. An investigation by Reuters in 2012 showed that Starbucks in the United Kingdom had been shifting profits out of the UK to avoid taxation. This led to an investigation by the European Union in 2014, which brought to light Starbucks's Swiss tax scheme.
If it wasn't for that investigation, we wouldn't have been able to sort of pin the case on Starbucks.
That's Jason Ward. He's an analyst with the Center for International Corporate Tax Accountability and Research, a network of researchers from across the world who study the tax and financial arrangements of global businesses. Earlier this year, Jason and his colleagues published a report showing that Starbucks continues to use its subsidiary in Switzerland to shrink its tax obligations.
We picked up the pieces left behind by the European Commission investigation. They compelled Starbucks to produce the filings and financial information from the Swiss subsidiary. We've been able to trace that since then through publicly available financial statements from companies in the Netherlands and in the United Kingdom. We've been able to trace that the levels of dividends paid out of the Swiss company have continued and continue to this date. So that the scheme hasn't been touched. Since 2011, what Starbucks continues to do is it purchases about 3% of global coffee production, the green coffee beans before they're roasted from mostly, well, from the global south, right? From coffee producing countries around the world. And those sales on paper are conducted in Switzerland by a subsidiary based in Switzerland. Starbucks Coffee Trading Company, SARL. And since 2011, it has marked up the price of the beans by 18% before it sells to other subsidiaries that then do the roasting and the retailing. So it's essentially pulling 18% profit margins out of the internal supply chain in Switzerland, where it's, you know, parked in Swiss bank accounts and taxed at very, very, very low rates. Like Switzerland is one of the world's biggest tax havens, and it's the center of the global commodity trade. So not just coffee, but all kinds of commodities are traded through Switzerland. So Starbucks presents a really crystal clear example of a much, much bigger problem in terms of tax havens and commodity trading altogether. The crazy thing about Starbucks is that this tax dodging scheme, we estimate that it produces about $150 million a year in profits shifted to Switzerland, which is about $1.3 billion over the last decade. So this is money taken out of the internal supply chain and parked at very low tax rates in Switzerland and held there or shifted to some other place like the Cayman Islands, where they also have a subsidiary. Starbucks' excuse for this tax scheme is that it funds its quote unquote ethical trading program, right? So this is supposedly ethically sourced fair trading coffee, and consumers in Oregon and across the world are paying a premium price because they are being told by Starbucks that this is fair trade, ethically sourced. And it's not. I mean, there are lawsuits happening in US federal courts now for false advertising because there's widespread evidence of labor abuses, child labor included, in Starbucks coffee supply chains in countries around the world, in Mexico, in Brazil, and elsewhere. You know, their excuse of this markup is precisely it funds this program. And we've been looking at their coffee farmer support centers in coffee producing countries and the amount of money that is spent by Starbucks on those programs is, you know, it's pocket fluff. It doesn't stack up to 150, doesn't come close, right? It's really a few pennies.
So to sum it up, Starbucks uses a subsidiary in Switzerland to buy green coffee beans. It then jacks up the price of the beans when it sells them to other Starbucks subsidiaries, the ones that actually sell coffee to consumers in Oregon and other places. Through this accounting trick, Starbucks is able to shift its profits to Switzerland. And what does this subsidiary in Switzerland look like? The one that on paper generates so much profits for Starbucks.
It's essentially a letterbox, right? It does. We know that it has directors. We organized with allies in Switzerland and with the some of the global trade union federations, we actually did a demo outside of its office. And there's really not an office, right? It's essentially a letterbox, right? This canton in Switzerland, the canton of Waadt, is a global coffee commodity trading center, but really none of the beans ever end up there. So I'll give you, a super clear example is Starbucks. Outside of the United States, its second largest market is in China. And China is the only country where Starbucks sources coffee, roasts coffee, and retails coffee. Yet, on paper, those coffee beans are traded by this Swiss subsidiary, right? Of course, it never, these beans don't climb up the Alps. They don't go there physically. But on paper, this supply chain that never leaves China is traded via Switzerland.
And what is the impact of this tax avoidance scheme by Starbucks? How does it affect the people of Oregon?
The impact of this in Oregon is that the profits of all of those Starbucks stores that are selling their pumpkin spice lattes or whatever it is that they're producing, you know, that profit is 18% less than it would be if they had actually bought the beans at a reasonable, fair price. It's reducing the profit that should be taxed in Oregon through that scheme. It has a tremendous effect on reducing tax levels in Oregon. Like, so that an 18% margin is, you know, I could understand a 1%, 2% even, maybe 3, but 18% is just outrageous in terms of, like, there's no value added by that purchase. It's purely a scheme to shift profits and to be able to report those profits in Switzerland rather than from the retail outlets in Oregon. So that shift of profit is directly reducing the taxable income from the sales to consumers, where obviously that's where the value is added, where the money is genuinely made. But this artificial construct puts the money into Swiss bank accounts where it's out of reach from state and federal tax authorities in the United States.
Aggressive corporate tax avoidance helps explain why, in Oregon, corporate income taxes have failed to keep up with corporate profits, as shown in a report recently published by the Oregon Center for Public Policy, the organization where I work. From 1980 to 2024, national corporate profits grew nearly twice as fast as corporate income tax payments to Oregon. In other words, corporate income tax payments to Oregon have not gone up anywhere near the level as the rise in corporate profits.
This is a huge percentage of global trade that goes from wealthy individuals and multinational corporations into tax havens around the world and, you know, is stealing public funding that should be there for infrastructure, schools, healthcare, social services. And, you know, we're kind of forced into austerity because corporations aren't paying what they should. So here we have a situation where the largest companies in the world are paying nothing in state taxes in the United States. And your small, you know, mom and pop businesses, your beauty shops and your car auto repair people are paying full rate because they don't have the ability to open a Swiss bank account or hire a big four consultant to advise them on how to shift their profits offshore. So they're subject to the full rate, whereas the largest corporations are able to completely avoid their obligations to pay for the services that they're using and that they benefit from.
Starbucks is far from alone when it comes to using accounting tricks in foreign tax havens to avoid paying their fair share of taxes. This is how Jason Ward describes it.
It is commonplace. I'd say it's the standard practice for all large multinationals, particularly U.S. multinationals who tend to be the most aggressive. And the sectors that are kind of pushing the limits to the extreme are big pharma and the IT companies. And they all use these schemes in some way. But you'll see these schemes around companies like McDonald's as well. You'd be surprised at how much intellectual property there is in a Big Mac. So it is standard practice, absolutely standard practice for all large multinationals to use these kind of tricks to artificially shift profits from where they're genuinely made, from where consumers are buying their product goods or services, to where they are taxed the least, or in some cases really not taxed at all.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Policy for the People. And in this episode, we're exploring how big corporations play games with the tax system, using offshore tax havens like Switzerland to hide profits earned in the U.S. and Oregon. As Jason mentioned, one of the sectors that pushes the extreme when it comes to tax avoidance is big pharma. In fact, one of the largest drug companies in the world, Pfizer, has a long history of playing games with the tax system.
Pfizer is one of the companies that's been in the news, that's been in the crosshairs of policymakers for about like 15 to 20 years.
That's Spandon Morosini, a data analyst with the Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that studies tax policy.
And so we've gotten like tidbits about their tax payments, non-tax payments over the years. So in 2004, the US government just passed the American Jobs Creation Act. And a part of that act was this thing called a repatriation holiday for corporations. So what does that mean? So it basically means that, you know, if I'm a multinational company, I have operations all around the world, right? And at that time, the US federal tax rate was 35% on corporate profits. So if I had operations in a tax haven, right, I have no incentive to bring those earnings back into the US where it's going to be taxed at 35%, right? So as part of the act to create jobs in the United States, they told companies that, okay, instead of paying 35%, you can pay 5% on these earnings. And Pfizer, you know, they took their opportunity and they actually brought back the highest amount of their earnings. They brought back $35 billion. So, you know, effectively giving them a $10 billion tax break, you know, so they paid $2 billion in taxes where if they had to pay 35%, it would have been $12 billion. And this came from a 2011 Senate Subcommittee on Investigations report, which analyzed this repatriation tax holiday. And they found that actually over, like since the passing of the holiday, Pfizer on net actually fired more people than hired more people. It was a few thousand, so it didn't really create jobs. And then we jump to 2017, right? So 2017, we see the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act passed, where again, we see another repatriation tax. This time it's mandatory and the companies aren't required to bring those profits from abroad to the US. They just have to pay the taxes on them, right? And again, they pay like less than half the statutory tax rate, which is now 21%. So they pay between 8% to 11%. And so Pfizer pays the third highest amount from our tallies, $13 billion in this repatriation tax. And if they paid anywhere from 8 to 11%, that means those earnings were probably over $100 billion, right? Moving on to just like the present day of Pfizer and what we see in their financials, it's a very interesting and confusing story, right? So over the last 10 years, Pfizer paid only a quarter of its taxes in the US, but almost 60% of its revenue comes from domestic operations. And even more bewildering, over that same span, they reported a total loss of $15 billion in the US, but profits of $150 billion internationally. You look at that and you say, how do you have so much of your operations here? And we know how expensive, you know, drug prices are and how, you know, how much the medical system in the United States actually benefits these pharmaceutical companies. And you wonder why, you know, you wonder what's going on. And to even make it more interesting, I guess, from Pfizer, maybe they're baiting us here, but in 2024, they list like 88 subsidiaries in Delaware, and also just a bunch in Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Ireland, and it's headquartered in New York, but it only has two subsidiaries in New York. So why does the company have so many subsidiaries in on all these tax havens? So yeah, Pfizer has been very interesting, but also frustrating because we don't know, like, we're getting close to an answer, it seems, from all these little tidbits, but they're not obligated to tell us anything, really.
As Pandan explains, all that secrecy comes at a cost, even to the owners of the company, the shareholders.
Well, it's overwhelmingly important for investors to know whether or not a company is making its profits through, you know, corporate scheming or like accounting schemes via tax evasion, right? Because that's just not a sustainable form of running a business, running an economy. And as investors, you'd want to know what you're putting your money into. A lot of people in the United States have their savings in many of these multinational companies. So, you know, meaning if you have a 401k or a retirement account, you know, it does matter. We want to know what we're putting our life savings into. You know, if a company is making money by using dodgy accounting practices, we should know. Even if a company is legally, and that's how it works, like companies, a lot of them are legally avoiding taxes. That doesn't come at a small cost, even for the companies themselves, right? Like if companies are allocating, you know, their financial capital towards creating like very intricate tax avoidance mechanisms rather than actually creating productive, like doing productive activities, at least by knowing what they're up to, we get the chance to decide whether or not we want to support these practices.
Not long ago, there were high hopes that we were about to see a big step forward in terms of corporate tax transparency, thanks to a new accounting rule set by the Financial Accounting Standards Board, commonly referred to as FASB.
FASB exists for investors mainly, right? Or researchers like us, or, you know, people, just the general public, but just exists for them to be able to have an apples to apples way of comparing company financials, right? So you want to be able to come up with the same data point for multiple companies. And also it exists for clarity, right? It tells companies what they have to report in their financial statements. And it was created in 1973, but it really came to relevance and importance after Enron, because, you know, Enron was using holes in the accounting standards at the time to hide its toxic debt, to hide toxic assets from its investors. And it, you know, after the fact, it came out that, you know, Enron was in cahoots with the accounting firms, and they basically had no effective guardrails. And so in 2002, we get the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, where FASB is really beefed up and they really start becoming more efficient, start really creating a lot of these accounting standards updates for people to avoid something like an Enron again.
As Spandan explains, the Securities and Exchange Commission entrusts FASB to set accounting standards for publicly traded corporations, companies listed in the Dow, NASDAQ, and such. And FASB issued a rule that those companies would have to start making more tax information public, including where they pay taxes. As Spandan wrote in a recent article, these updated standards will require companies like Pfizer to provide in-depth, country-by-country breakdowns of their taxes, giving a peek into the potential tax-dodging tactics of multinational enterprises. So without a doubt, this new FASB rule set to take effect constitutes a big step forward for corporate tax transparency, a real victory for the public. But that rule may actually never see the light of day. The Republican-controlled Congress is poised to kill it. As we're recording this, there's a government shutdown underway. The U.S. House of Representatives passed the spending bill, but it failed to clear the Senate. Tucked deep inside that spending bill is a directive to the Securities and Exchange Commission to defund FASB, unless it retracts the tax transparency rule.
FASB is under the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, and Congress funds the SEC, and by virtue of that, Congress funds FASB. What Congress has said is, you know, if FASB enforces this accounting standards update, we're not going to provide funding for them. So either you take this standards update out, or no money for FASB, no money for, you know, the accounting board for a lot of the world's capital. I'm quite surprised that this never received the amount of scrutiny it deserved. It seems like it's going to get passed, and so we most likely will see the end of this update.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Policy for the People. We're discussing how big corporations artificially shift profits abroad to avoid paying taxes in the U.S. and in Oregon, and how requiring corporations to make more information public can help fix the problem. Unless the language killing this advancement in corporate tax transparency is removed in whatever spending bill Congress ultimately passes, it'll be business as usual, at least at the federal level. Starbucks, Pfizer, and all the other corporate giants will continue to game the system to shift their profits from the places where they were earned to a place like Switzerland or some other foreign tax haven.
It seems quite obvious that this is in the public interest. This issue is a very bipartisan issue. It's something that everyone agrees on. Congress, in this instance, did not listen to the public and public demands for corporations to, you know, just tell us more about their taxes, let alone even pay their fair share. And you're just wondering why, like, you know, this doesn't make any sense.
The move to kill the new corporate tax disclosure rule by threatening to defund FASB is part of a larger pattern by the Trump administration, according to Jason.
I mean, the Trump administration is essentially become a protector of multinational tax avoiders, right? This is not about making U.S. companies pay tax in the U.S. This is a protection racket to allow U.S. multinationals to dodge their tax liabilities both in the U.S. and internationally. And, you know, the people that Trump has put in charge of U.S. tax policy have been the ones advising corporations for decades on just how to do this. So there's no intent there to actually make U.S. companies pay what they should, either in the U.S. or internationally. In fact, it's, you know, essentially a protection racket to allow them to continue to abuse the international system.
But even if the situation at the federal level looks bleak, there's hope at the state level for something better.
There's actually quite a lot that a state can do. One is sort of just general transparency and requiring disclosure of what taxes are paid by which corporations or not paid by which corporations, right? So just putting that information in the public domain has huge potential to draw attention and focus to further solutions.
Big multinational corporations will scream and yell that the world is going to fall apart if more information on their profits and taxes is made public. But that's demonstrably not true. Australia, where Jason lives, has had much stronger transparency laws in place for over a decade.
We've had a high level of disclosure in Australia for 11 years now. So we can go, any company with over 100 million revenue, I can go and tell you how much tax they've paid or not paid over the last 11 years. This has really driven debates and reforms that have raised substantial amounts of tax revenue to fund our public services here.
And guess what? The world hasn't fallen apart. Despite having to disclose more information on their profits and taxes, big multinational corporations continue to do business in Australia, including Starbucks. And now, Australia has gone even further, Jason explains.
Last year, we passed legislation for what is called public country-by-country reporting. So any multinational or any corporation that operates in Australia with over $10 million Australian dollars in revenue will have to report on the number of employees, its total income, related party transactions, and tax paid in Australia, as well as 40 jurisdictions around the world that are widely regarded as tax havens. So this is, the European Union has a similar country by country reporting requirement now, but Australia's is far stronger in terms of what is required to be reported. And just, you know, a week or two ago, the U.S., the biggest corporate lobby groups in the U.S. have been weighing in on the U.S. Treasury to try to get the Trump administration to threaten Australia. I say that because that's how threatened they are by this transparency and how important it is to sort of have that data out there. These companies are scared that when their sordid, shady tax dealings are out in the open, that people are going to be upset about it and take action to close down loopholes that are currently abused.
So as the case of Australia shows, more transparency can help curb corporate tax avoidance. It makes it harder for corporations to play games with the tax system when they know they will have to make their financial information public. There's a saying that sunlight is the best disinfectant. That certainly appears to be the case when it comes to corporate tax avoidance. That's it for today's show. I want to thank Jason Ward and Spandon Maracini for sharing their insights into how it is that big corporations hide their profits and what we can do to address the problem. And as always, thank you for listening to Policy for the People. We will see you next time.
Jeremy Scahill, author of Dirty Wars, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Good morning, and thanks for listening to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland. KBOO is a volunteer